I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Bruce Schneier, an internationally renowned security technologist, author, fellow at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University, and a lecturer in public policy at the Harvard's Kennedy School. You can learn more about Bruce on his website, Schneier on Security, at schneier.com. Welcome, Bruce. It's great to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Bruce, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're renowned in our industry. Steve Morgan, our editor-in-chief and founder here at Cybercrime Magazine and Cybersecurity Ventures, he bought your book, Applied Cryptography, back in the mid-1990s, and he's been following you ever since as one of the industry's top sources. So I wanted to mention that for you. And
that was a long time ago. We published a 25th anniversary edition of that book some years ago.
Oh, really? Oh, perfect. Yeah, I think, did that book come out in like 93-ish, I think? So yeah, it would have been.
Actually, that's very good. It came out in fall of 93. That was the first edition, the blue one. Most people have the red one, which came out 2 years later. That's the second edition and much thicker and more words.
Okay, great. That's awesome. So Bruce, I know that we could probably do a whole episode devoted to this question, but could you start off by sharing with our listeners a little bit about what got you interested in this field and kind of what brought you to where you are today?
Oh, wow.
I've always been interested in cryptography, I mean, even as a kid. So I got here through a series of generalizations. You mentioned my first book, which is The Mathematics of Security Cryptography. And then I started writing about computer security and network security and general security technology. And then I would write about the economics and psychology and sociology of security. Now I mostly write about the policy of security. And you mentioned I teach at the Harvard Kennedy School, where I teach cybersecurity policy. So I got here pretty early, and my career follows very much the public internet.
Very fascinating. And Bruce, you were recently one of the keynote speakers at this year's RSA conference, where you discussed your AI hacker research, which can be found in your paper, The Coming AI Hackers, which was published in April of this year. I know that you discuss how it relates to public policy and the implications there, but I'm wondering if you could tell us about that research, what you've found, and why you wanted to share your findings with the general public.
So yeah, let's start at the last RSA conference, which was last year before the pandemic. Kind of amazing. It was not a spreader event, although by all rights, it should have been.
Right.
Most of us came there, tens of thousands of people. A few companies stayed home. I remember that AT&T and Verizon didn't exhibit. And the joke there was that they, of course, didn't exhibit. They were common carriers. And that was funny back then. And I gave a talk in person in front of a crowd of people, which sounds amazing right now, on extending the concept of hacking to broader social systems. So what does it mean to hack the tax code? And the tax code isn't computer code, but it's algorithms. It has inputs. It has outputs. It has bugs. It has vulnerabilities. We call them tax loopholes. It has exploits. We call them tax avoidance strategies. And there actually are a group of black hat hackers whose job it is to find bugs in the tax code, and they're tax attorneys, they're tax accountants. And this notion of hacking, subverting systems, finding loopholes, ways to make the systems do what you want, where the designers didn't intend or anticipate, can be extended to the tax code, to financial regulations, to laws in general, to legislative processes. And I gave a talk on that. And that was a book I was writing in the early months of the pandemic, which was a good thing to do during a pandemic. We had nothing else to do.
Yeah, true.
But I did stop in the middle of winter. Problem is, the book was due 2 months ago, and it will be published in November of this year. And I really felt, as I was writing, that the book needed to speak to a post-2020 world, and I had no idea what a post-2020 world needed to hear. And anything I wrote that would be written in spring and published in fall would be obsolete the moment it was published. So I delayed for a year. This work on AIs and hacking are two chapters from that book, where I thought I was saying something that no one has said before and I wanted to get it out there and not wait another year for the book to be published. That's the genesis of that work.
Okay, great. And so do you want to share with us more about that work? Because I know that it's really fascinating, and I'm seeing it, you know, your research getting picked up all in all different media outlets.
So I can't claim that it's super secret, and no. So yes, I do want to talk about it.
Okay, great.
And so what I say in my book is that hacking is a very human process. Right? Figuring out a loophole, whether it's in computer code or the tax code or in financial regulations, involves studying all of the rules and finding the cracks, finding the things the designers didn't anticipate. And that this is a human process that will be taken over by AIs. So back in computer code, AIs are already finding vulnerabilities in systems. Now, they're not that good at it, but they find buffer overflows. They find different hacks. They find different exploits. There are a bunch of papers on this, and they're getting better. You know, my guess is this follows the trajectory of pretty much all AI systems. They start out much worse than humans. Right? They slowly get better. Humans stay the same. One year they cross, and then for the rest of time, computers are better than humans at the task. And that could be identifying photographs, and that could be making moves in a game of chess or a game of Go, or it could be finding bugs in software. So what happens if we think about that trajectory with these other types of hacks? What happens if you feed an AI the entire world's tax codes? Will it find loopholes? How many? And how do we deal with that? So I'm really talking about this difference between human vulnerability finding and computer vulnerability finding. Now, you know, in the tax code, loopholes are found and they're exploited and they're closed basically at human speeds, not at computer speeds. So that represents a change, which is important. So two things I want to talk about. If you don't mind me monologuing a little bit.
No.
That are important here. And the first one is reward hacking. This is what they call, AI researchers call it, when an AI finds a goal, it finds a way to achieve a goal that you never anticipated. So a lot of these happen in simulations. So an AI in a block stacking task figures out that it could flip a block upside down and achieve the goal rather than stack it because of the way the reward was calculated. I saw some kind of simulation of a evolution where an AI was able to achieve the goal of crossing a distant finish line, not by running faster, which is what the designers intended, but by growing really tall and falling over it. Those are hacks. So I found a researcher talking about programming their robot vacuum cleaner not to bump into things. And instead of not bumping into things, it learned to drive backwards because there were no bumper sensors back there. I mean, these are all reward hacks. So this happens, right? AIs, because they follow the solution space differently, come up with ways of achieving the goals that the designers didn't anticipate. And some of those will be hacks. Second thing is the notion that a lot of these hacks will be undiscoverable. So AIs are black boxes. It's very hard to know what's going on under the hood. We have this problem today. It's the explainability problem. Why did the AI show you this ad or choose that movie that you might like to watch? Often we have no idea. Why did it pick this person for college admission and that person for parole? We often don't really know. So there's a story in security. This is not an AI story. This is actually a human hacking story. Volkswagen and its emission control tests. This made the news as a big deal. For over a decade, Volkswagen cheated on emission control tests. Now, these were human engineers cheating. What they did is they designed the engine to detect when a test was happening and to behave differently during that period. Now, this is a black box. No one knew who was doing it, except the designers. And it got away with it for over a decade. So imagine an AI being told to design an engine to maximize performance while also passing a more all emission control tests. It could independently come up with that hack. It wouldn't realize it was a hack. And because of the explainability problem, right, the engineers are ecstatic, the marketers are thrilled, nobody knows it's happening. And sure, now that I've just explained this problem, we can program the AI not to behave differently during testing. Now we know that's kind of an obvious thing to program in, but there are thousands of other ways that we can't program in because it's impossible to completely specify goals or rewards. And a lot of things come from context, right? So if I ask you to get me some coffee, but you would not bring me a drop of coffee. You would not buy me a coffee plantation or even a pound of raw beans. Nor would you go to the nearest person with a cup of coffee, rip it out of their hands, and give it to me, right? I wouldn't have to specify any of that because you would just know that.
Right.
And AI doesn't have that common sense. You have to specify everything, yet you can't. And the systems are opaque. So I worry about AI hackers and what they can do, both if asked, right? If, you know, a large investment banking firm tells it to hack the financial networks, right? Give us new loopholes. Or if it does it inadvertently in a Volkswagen design the engine type of scenario. Both of these are possible. Now, this is kind of still science fiction. There's a lot between here and there, but it's not stupid science fiction. So I wanted to publish this essay to talk about this issue in advance of my book. It's a very long-winded answer to your question.
That was great. And in the example you just gave of AI hackers in the financial services industry, what I'm hearing you say is that that could be that could happen theoretically down the road, and no one would even know until, is it until something bad happened, like Volkswagen or something like that, or how do we find out that this is happening in the future?
We might not. And Volkswagen, nothing bad happened, right? A couple of researchers dug into the engine software and figured it out.
Okay.
You know, if they didn't do it, we still would not know.
Right.
So there are a couple of scenarios here. One, hedge funds are a series of hacks the past decades. This is a chapter in the book that'll be published in another year and a half.
Okay.
Right? All the hacks that hedge funds have discovered, you know, loopholes in the rules. So the first is that a hedge fund manager creates an AI, gives it all the rules and say, find me new hacks. This is kind of equivalent to AIs doing art, writing poetry. They come up with candidates and humans look at it and say, well, that's stupid. That'll never work. Well, that's a really good idea. And then implement it. So then you would just have this AI engine finding these loopholes that humans would exploit the same way they do it today. Right? So that's sort of scenario one. Scenario two is more like Volkswagen, that the AI is given the task, here's a bunch of financial rules, here are the levers to the system, here's my accounts, go make money. And we don't know what in the world it's doing. All we know is that the bank balance is rising every month or every millisecond, and we're kind of happy. Right? So you could have both of those occurring depending on how looped in the AI is to the system. But it's really not about the AI making trades and doing a flash crash. It's more about the AI mimicking the human process and then humans taking over. You know, so let's just take an old hack of the filibuster.
Sure.
Right, the filibuster is the hack from Roman times. We know the Roman senator who invented it. Basically, the rules of the time were all business must be completed by sundown. And someone realized, if I never stop talking, it'll be sundown and they can't complete the business. This is awesome. Right? That hack has become institutionalized to the point where it's really no longer a hack. It's kind of in the rules. And you know, we can debate in this country whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. Now, you could think of an AI coming up with that. Sports is full of hacks. The history of Formula One racing or America's Cup yacht racing. In basketball, dunking was originally a hack. In hockey, curving your hockey stick was a hack. And these all became part of the rules invented by humans. So you can imagine an AI replicating that. Now, in some of those, it's harder because it's much harder to instantiate the system, the rewards, the feedback into an AI. You know, it's not as easy as the game of Go or even financial regulations. But again, you know, I would want to start thinking about this now, because what we know about AI research is it's very discontinuous. Things that we think of are easy turn out to be hard. Things we think of are hard turn out to be easy. And, you know, this stuff will happen really before we know about it, unless we pay attention now.
And Bruce, how should we start paying attention now? Because that was kind of my next question for you was, I think I read in an article that you could have been your paper actually, where you said you think that we'll be dealing with something along these lines in a decade or so. And you know, how can we prepare? Is there a way to prepare for this? Or is it just kind of a overall need for awareness?
You know, there kind of isn't. I worry about the speed of human rulemaking processes. So if you are Microsoft and there's a vulnerability found in your code, you could write a patch and push it out in a day or so, right? You might wait for patch Tuesday, you might wait a month, but you could, if you had to, push a patch out very, very quickly. You find a bug in the tax code, it takes years for the tax law to be amended. You know, maybe it's quicker if it can done through an agency ruling, but if it requires a change in the law, it's gonna take a long time. And it might never happen. We need to be more agile about patching these systems. If an AI shows up with 10, 100, 1,000 vulnerabilities in the tax code, suddenly they're all being used because they're legal. Remember, they're unintended, unanticipated, but they're loopholes. They're legal. And now our tax revenues drop by 2/3. It's crazy. The government can't function. Now, we need to think about how we can patch our social and political systems at the speed we can patch our tech systems. So that's what I'd like to start thinking about. Now, I'm not sure how we do that, because that sounds anti-democratic, but I think it's going to be necessary.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And that's a good point. And I think that that's a nice segue into my next question for you, because I read your recent article in Foreign Policy about how Sunburst demonstrated how vulnerable the cloud is. And when you were just speaking, it made me think of how things like this, that, you know, we don't really prepare for them. It sounds like we kind of hope they don't happen. And then when it kind of blows up, we're super reactive and we try to scramble together some kind of patch or some kind of solution. That's kind of what I was hearing. And I wonder if there are any parallels there between kind of the theoretical situation you're talking about and what you viewed with Sunburst.
A lot of this is the security difficulties of complex, adaptive, tightly coupled, nonlinear systems, which is our supply chain, which is our tax code, which is a lot of the human socio-technical systems that we build. And they're very hard to secure because the feedback loops are weird, and often the ways they're updated are weird, and they're not simple. So a lot of it is looking at that. And you could think of, you know, SolarWinds or cloud security as a very complex system that's being attached to your network that you have no visibility into. I mean, I'm concerned about Google security because my security depends on it. What do I know about Google security? Absolutely nothing. I have no visibility into it. Or, you know, SolarWinds, if you were a SolarWinds customer, or a Dropbox, or sort of any, or Zoom, which we are now recording on.
Yeah.
We have very little visibility into the security of these systems, yet we must rely on them. And it's going to be the same for these broader social systems. Now, I really don't know how the tax code works. No, a little bit, but not really. It's way too complex. I'm not sure anybody knows the way the tax code works in this, you know, in the deeply intimate, I know everything about it way.
Right.
Just like no one knows how the internet works in that level of detail. It's just too complex.
Yeah.
So there's new security vulnerabilities in these new complexities. And, you know, sort of our systems look at redundancy as a bad thing, especially our market economy. You know, it pulls redundancy out of a system. It's inefficient and it's unprofitable. Turns out it has security value, which we learned during COVID. That lack of redundancy caused a lot of problems. And we're seeing that in supply chain. And we'll see that again in many systems.
Absolutely. And Bruce, I know that we're kind of coming to the towards the end of our interview, but I see that you'll be a keynote speaker at Black Hat in Las Vegas later this summer. So I'm curious, what will you be presenting on? Will it be related to any of this at all, or is it going to be a little different? I think that you're presenting with a couple of other folks, but I could be wrong.
So I'm staying in a couple of places. Okay. I'm on a panel, and I actually right now forget the topic of the panel, but I am speaking at the AI Village on this writ large. You know, from the point of view of what hackers can do about it.
Okay.
I'm talking about this notion of AI hacking at the AI Village.
Awesome.
And not in person, though. I know Black Hat is hybrid and DEF CON is hybrid this year, but I'm not convinced. I mean, I don't know if you've been in the before time. It was crazy crowded. How do you have DEF CON without all those crowds? So next year I'll be there.
Okay. So this year you're remote because it's a hybrid.
That's what I'm doing. It feels a little safer.
Yeah, for sure. And I've been in the before world, and yes, it's very, very crowded. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that will work.
I know. I think these are good months. Yeah, we really have to take advantage of the summer.
Sure.
My fear is the variants coming out of India. It's just too much.
Right.
Too much spread for it not to mutate, and sooner or later, it's going to mutate out of the spike protein. It's not going to be good.
Yeah, I understand that. That makes sense. And one quick thought I had, maybe a happy note for us, is the AI hacking that can be used for good as well, not just necessarily bad actors, right?
Well, man, I think that's the interesting thing about using AIs as hackers. So again, think about computer code, right? Sure, the hackers can throw code into the system to find a bunch of bugs to exploit. But developers can do the same thing and fix bugs before the code is released. You can imagine it being built into the compilers. So I think we could envision a world where software vulnerabilities are a thing of the past before the AI is discovered and fixed them all. Now, the interstitial period is really dangerous, the legacy code. But fast forward 20 years, all new code could be basically bug-free, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
And the same thing could happen with these other social systems. You can imagine giving an AI any new tax rule before it's voted on, before it's approved, and it could find all the loopholes. Again, the interstitial period is dangerous, but on the whole, in the long term, AI vulnerability finding benefits the defense, not the offense. That was an important thing to add. Good question.
Okay, good. Great. Well, Bruce, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up for our listeners?
No, this is good. This was a really interesting thing for me to think about and write about. And if you just type Schneier AI hackers into Google, you'll come up with the essay. It's also on my website, schneier.com. And read it. Email me. I'm curious what people think.
Wonderful. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been an excellent conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was Bruce Schneier, an internationally renowned security technologist, author, fellow at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University, and a lecturer in public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School. You can learn more about Bruce on his website, Schneier on Security, at schneier.com, and you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.